Good morning. It is Tuesday, June the 14th, 2016. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners General Discussion. We had a little technical difficulty this morning. It's 9:03 a.m. And just before the meeting started, I asked our number one agenda item presenters if they would mind if we switched one and two so we could have our building safety director come up to the table, if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Rice. So if that's okay with you, Commissioner Heck, yes.
Good morning. All right.
Good morning. I know we asked you to come back a week or so ago while we read over the presentation that you gave us at another meeting, and then we got some feedback from our HR department, and I also asked our planning department director to look through it and see if she would have any problem with it, and so I have provided a copy to each commissioner. Commissioner Hare is not here today, by the way. I just want to say that for the record as well. So, do you have any further questions, Commissioner Heck, since you have a chance to look through this?
Being that I wasn't here on major.
Well, he didn't really make a presentation. He gave us this packet of material, which I think was saved for you. You got one?
Yeah,
this one. Okay. And specifically the exhibits, the appendix, let's see. Find them here. Over the beginning.
Yeah, for your benefit, this is a pamphlet, a booklet that we have to put together for Building Codes Division.
There he is.
And Building Codes Division has to approve our program to basically administer the codes that they adopt. So ultimately in the state, Building Codes Division is responsible. We run a local program to carry out that responsibility, so they have to approve our program. So this document is what I submit to them every 4 years that explains what we're doing, our office hours, our all the different aspects of it. But in this document, it also talks quite a bit about the role of the building official as prescribed in statute and rule and in the building codes. So I thought that'd be a good sort of primer to kind of get a picture of the role of the building official. So.
And we have this analysis by J.J. Schofield and HR, and the question I had asked last time is that we are required to have a building official. That's a requirement. And the appendix, that's in Appendix E. The Appendix D is where the Board of Commissioners previously, back in 1977, made that building official also the administrator. So that is why Mr. Rice has been the administrator as well as the building official since 12 years now.
Yeah.
You've been here and done a very good job of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hate to lose you. And I hate to go forward with any kind of decision without Commissioner Hare being here, but I think that time is of the essence. You only have about 3 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks or so. The end of the month.
So what we need to do is to direct Mr. Schofield in regards to going ahead to advertise whatever position it is we decide we want to advertise. So that is what we need to do. Have any
questions? Yes, I asked the questions, obviously, knowing I'm going to get your candid opinion. You're not going to be evasive in answering the questions, so I appreciate that. You understand the situation that we are in, the county is in, because of a whole variety of reasons. But yet, on the other hand, this whole thing is essential to building and development and all that other stuff that you have done and are doing. What is your estimation of melding what your role is under the planning department? Is that any big flies in the ointment on that thing that you see?
It can be. there's, I think we talked a little bit last time, there's duties of the building official, and in this case, Josephine County's position is building safety director. So that's the actual title of the position. So you're directing the department, but you're also, you also have the very intensive technical role as building official, applying the codes, making interpretations of the codes, decisions daily, those type of things. So in a, I guess, a hierarchy chart or an administration chart, it might make sense that planning comes first and then building permits. So it might make sense, looking visually at the chart, that would work well. But considering the role of the building official and those decisions they have to make and the technical matters and those type of things, it kind of needs to be a standalone position in that regard. So administratively, there's pros and cons. Technically, it gets challenging. And a lot of communities, I think we talked before, have kind of a community development department. And so underneath the community development department, there'd be public works, planning, building safety, and possibly others, DEQ if they do that type of services. But that's almost like a model where you've got like another layer of management sort of overseeing three or four equal type of departments. So it's not that it can't be done. It's been tried in many places. It brings up challenges.
Okay. Because obviously this is a situation that, God forbid, that pragmatics should be the driving factor, and there has to be a bigger concept of purpose and effectiveness of what is being done, rather than we need a body. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if we all appreciate, not here necessarily, but everybody else, all appreciate the expertise that you have obtained and that you use in fulfilling the work that you do. And the amount of work that you do is reflective of the failing amount of funds that we have to see a job done adequately. And I just don't know how. I can see out of necessity and out of pragmatics how moving us to the planning and community development, how that might be necessary. I'm just not sure about the effectiveness and the real efficacy of meeting the standards and the needs that are there.
There's a couple other aspects. One is the financial, and you mentioned funds. It also talks in that document about the funds for the Building Safety Department, and by statute, the funds that are brought in for revenues for permit fees are required to be used only for the running of the building safety program. Those funds can't be used for planning or anything else. They're dedicated funds.
Right.
So that, and I think the planning department is largely funded by general fund and the permit fees that they take in for development permits and things. So that would be something that would have to be navigated to ensure to building code divisions satisfaction that the funds are used appropriately for the building inspection program. Mm-hmm.
I think that's about the same structure, though, as about 90% of the county budget, because almost all of it comes in as dedicated funds, mm-hmm. and we just have to make sure they go to the right place in every department. 91 million dollar budget and less than 10 million is discretionary. All the other 80 million is dedicated funds. So that's something that our accounting department is really, really familiar with, mm-hmm. and that we know that the appropriate allocation of those funds is necessary to sustaining those programs. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, and even within our program, we've really got two programs that by statute have to be kept separate as well. That's electrical program, mm-hmm. is a separate program from everything else that we do in building safety. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, I was just looking here, and it shows that the comments were that Douglas County operates the same way we do, but Klamath, Lynn, Lincoln, and Yamhill, either a community development department that includes building safety or a planning department that oversees building safety. And then Polk has the same hierarchy structure as Klamath, with the community development director overseeing building safety.
Yeah, I think
and then they contract out their building official. That's interesting.
Which, Polk?
It says Polk.
Yeah.
Contracts out their building official. That would be an interesting dynamic. We hadn't, I don't know if we want to do that.
And typically smaller scale
jurisdictions,
that's an option.
Mm-hmm.
And the third party that I'm going to work for, we contract four small
mm-hmm.
cities to do all their services, including building official.
Right.
But the workload is pretty small within those four cities.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Do you have any other comments that you think we need to hear? And then we'll let you go back to work.
Yeah, I mean, basically, ultimately, it's your decision,
yeah.
and I respect that. I was just asked to sort of give my input.
Yes, and we appreciate that. This is going to be challenging today for moving.
Yeah,
sorry, Mr. Rice.
That's right. If you have no further questions.
Okay. Do you have any questions?
Not right now. I mean,
okay.
The devil is in the details that make this thing work. That's the real struggle.
I'm sure Karen will be here.
And we've got this grand idea, and we're going to do this, and it's all crudola. We've got to do what to get it done? That kind of thing. That's my concern.
Yeah, I will say that this is a topic. This question has come out. There's two questions that kind of every year or two they come back up, and one is combining planning and building safety. The other is combining county building safety with city building safety. And so it's been investigated again and again, and I've got paperwork long before my time in the office from newspaper clippings and other stuff into the 80s and 70s, and it's been asked again and again and again, and the end answer each time has been, no, let's not do that. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
You say the company you're going to work for contracts with cities, so they don't contract with any counties?
Well, we have a contract currently with them, and we've had that. We've used them for maybe 10 years I've been here, 12 years I've been here. And primarily what we use them for is backup.
Mm-hmm.
If we've got more plans than we can get to, or have an inspector out, we need some help with inspections, that type of stuff. So plan review and inspection, they help us out, but at this time they don't provide building official services, which is kind of where the decision making happens.
Mm-hmm.
And as I explained last time, if I've got a big commercial set of plans that I know it's going to take me a week and I'm not going to get to anything else, I'll send that to them. So they'll do a technical code review, and they'll go through the code and identify items that meet the code, don't meet the code, and basically provide me back a list. And then at that point, as the building official, now it's my turn to start making decisions about what to do about that. So there's just a technical code analysis. The building official decisions and what he does with it from there is kind of a different thing.
Is that an annual contract, or is it a...
It's an annual contract.
An annual.
Yeah, we renew it every year. So to answer your question more directly, then the four cities that we do, or we, I'm trying to keep my hat separate here, we do full service for them, including the building official role, because they just don't have the activity, the revenue to support staff. So.
I have any
okay.
further questions. Thank you, Mr. Rice.
Yep.
Appreciate it. How about Thursday on this, when Simon is here, so we can make a decision on it?
Fine.
Because it involves actually combining the departments, if that's where we go.
The letter, the email we got from Julie is talking about.
Yes.
We can't simply ignore that function dependent on someone else. Everyone seems to be at full capacity. Idea of doing inspections and that kind of stuff. How would that work out? And the compensation aspect, somebody's got to be compensated for doing additional work.
Right. We, We still have one inspector over there. We just don't have the one level that he is. He has more certifications.
Okay. Other than that, we've got a great auto. We just don't have an engine, but it looks really good.
It has a body, but no
engine. Yes, that's it. Okay. Thanks, Trevor.
Thank you very much. Okay, we will move on to our item number one, the presentation on public safety. This is our other guest here. I appreciate your indulgence to have Mr. Rice first.
Not a problem.
You're welcome to come up here, too, if you'd like.
Actually, I can't really hear, so I will.
Yeah.
I wasn't needed.
I've just got notes on here,
okay.
So I'll be fine.
Okay.
I'll just have a seat. We can keep it somewhat casual. Just kind of go through the research that I did and how it relates to the situation here in Josephine County.
Okay.
So I'll just go ahead and introduce myself first. That I'm Nathan Davis. I'm a Master of Public Policy, I guess, now graduate from Oregon State University.
Congratulations.
And anyways, what I've done a lot of my thesis work on has been related to the public safety issue here in Josephine County, particularly in concerns to citizen perceptions of the public safety levies that have been, or the referenda and the levies that have been attempted to be passed in the past 4 years. And so in November, I believe it was November, Mike came to the School of Public Policy looking for someone to do some work trying to understand what citizen perceptions of these levies were, and hoping that they would do a content analysis of letters to the editor to the Grants Pass Daily Courier, and which is what I've been working on for the past 6 months. So Jan and Mike had done a lot of work previously, had done some content analysis before on a lot of letters to the editor, so a lot of my work was just a continuation of that work. They identified over 800 letters to the editor that seemed to have something to do with the relationship between citizens and the Josephine County government, or in particular, citizens and these particular levies. From there, I took their information that they had and narrowed that down into about 458 letters to the editor that were directly applied to the public safety levies, just so I could figure out what exactly citizen opinions were of the particular levies that we wanted to look at, as opposed to necessarily just government in general or politics or whatever they want to do. So what I did is I took these letters to the editor, and I originally did what's known as a latent content analysis, just identifying generally whether individuals were in support or opposition to these particular levies, and what particular arguments people were using to formulate their opinions, to decide whether or not they wanted to support or oppose. So what I did is I then categorized each of these into a particular theoretical framework that seemed to be appropriate, what's known as group engagement theory framework, which was identified to me by my major professor at the time as one that seemed to relate to a lot of the arguments that were being used by Josephine County residents in these letters to the editor. So then further, I did some thematic coding and started coding each of these letters into each of these categories within the framework. So briefly, I'll discuss kind of the categories that I coded each of these letters into. The big two were just basically resource judgments on whether or not individuals thought that the outcomes of the levy would be positive or negative for them, and then arguments underneath the resource judgments also whether or not people thought that the outcomes would be fair to them or not. In addition, I also looked beyond outcomes, whether or not individuals thought that the processes used to develop the levies was just, whether or not they felt like the process was trustworthy, neutral, and respectful of them individually, and then also whether or not they felt like they had a say or they had some kind of control over the decisions being made by government in making these levies. And so overall, when I coded the 458 letters to the editor to Grants Pass Daily Courier, I found that 47% supported the levy And about 52% ended up opposing the levy, which ended up being a pretty good ratio given the results of the referendum. I was surprised that it matched so closely to that. You wouldn't necessarily expect that. And anyways, I found that about 76% of the letters utilized some kind of concern for either the outcomes or the fairness of outcomes, the quality or fairness of outcomes, whereas 47% cared more about the process themselves. Letters could be coded multiple times, so there were some letters that would talk about the process itself while also talking about outcomes in some way or another.
What was the 20%?
The 20%?
You said 76%.
Oh, sorry, there's 76 and then 47.
Oh, I'm sorry, 47.
So 47 was talking about the process, 76 was talking about outcomes, resource judgment outcomes. So looking through the procedural justice ones, which was looking at the process, and in particular looking at the control that individuals felt over decisions, about 15% of supporters utilized some kind of decision control argument, feeling like they did have some kind of say. A big portion of these were more concerned about if the levy did not pass, they were concerned that the state or the federal government would end up having to take some kind of control and they would lose their ability to make any kind of decisions in levy decisions or tax levy decisions. Opponents were a little bit more common to use decision control arguments, saying about 28% of them utilize some kind of decision control argument. Most of them argue or were making arguments that they felt like they were not being heard, and they felt like that since the county citizens had opposed these referenda in the past, they didn't understand why the county kept proposing the same thing over and over again, in their opinion. A lot as for treatment, looking at whether or not individuals felt like the processes were fair in making these judgments, a lot of supporters, about 25% of supporters, utilized some kind of trust argument, saying that they did trust and support the government, and they felt like the people who were making decisions were impressive to them and experienced enough to make good decisions. Whereas we saw about 41% saying the alternative to that, saying that they felt like there was some kind of gap in that trust between citizens and politicians, and that's why they ended up opposing any kind of a levy arrangement. Moving on to outcomes, there were a number of people who made some kind of argument about whether or not they felt like the outcomes would be of quality if the levy were to pass. This is particularly common amongst supporters. Over half of the supporters, 52.9%, use some kind of outcome favorability argument. Most of these relating to some kind of fear of the lack of public safety that might happen if there is no levy, or the current state of affairs, saying that they felt like since there was not a levy in place or there was not proper funding for law enforcement, they felt like they were scared for themselves or their families. Opponents were much less likely to utilize this argument, but they would occasionally state that they felt like the current level of service provision and public safety was sufficient, and they felt like they did not need any particular levy. Fairness, though, was probably the most common argument, particularly amongst opponents. Opponents, 64.4%, used some kind of fairness argument, stating that either the particular tax measure was unfair, in particular in regards to property taxes. A lot of people felt like property taxes were unfair, in particular to homeowners. Retirees were also people who were cited as individuals that property tax levies would be unfair to. Supporters also utilize this. 45% of supporters use some kind of fairness argument, more focused on the fairness of not providing proper levels of public safety, in particular to elderly people and to children. And then also arguments used within this fairness principle were among supporters were the fact that the state and federal government had commonly had to give money to the county in order to provide for public safety, and they felt like this was an unfair arrangement and that the county should in some way provide for itself through property taxes or otherwise. And so generally, what the findings of this study were was that amongst opponents usually used either some kind of distributive justice argument in relation to the fairness of whether or not whether a levy would be fair, or they utilized some kind of treatment or trust argument, saying that they did not have trust in the government. On the other side, supporters were more likely to cite whether or not they felt like they were safe, looking at outcomes, thinking that if the levy did not pass, it would result in poor outcomes for them. So, some further recommendations, further findings that I found from this is that people do seem to want to have more transparency and accountability in government. Seems to be a common theme. It seems like there's some major gaps in information, whether or not from people understanding where funding goes or how exactly things are funded. And there's also a high amount of contradictory information among citizens, where you'll have people who utilize facts that completely oppose each other in regards to whether or not there's a proper level of safety in the county or on tax issues or et cetera. So,
in the illustration of that?
Let's see. An illustration of that would be, in particular, there were a couple studies that came out that I think they were from the sheriff's office that suggested there were a higher amount of crime in the county, which this opposed some other figures that stated that there was a lower level of crime. That was probably the most common. Yeah. And so with that, there are a few caveats to this study. The biggest is just the use of letters to the editor. Letters to the editor, while they're very useful in collecting public opinion, sometimes you get just the most passionate voices out. Some research has found that only about 6% of Oregon residents actually use letters to the editor. And so it's questionable how much you can actually generalize these findings. However, it does give quite the variety of opinions and kind of gives you a day-by-day understanding of where the opinions of the county are going. So further research I would suggest is taking these findings, either use them to develop survey instruments to get to a broader area to understand what public opinion are, or utilizing interviews to get more depth as to what individuals feel in the county, maybe looking at stakeholders in the county and understanding what they want. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you. You did all the work.
Yeah. So if you have any questions, let me know.
So, Nathan, just for information, you told me that your Master of Public Policy will be web published, is it?
It will be. Currently, I'm going through a couple of bureaucratic loops.
Eventually, this study will be available to all from the OSU Rural Studies Program.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking as early as early next week.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That was one of the questions that I asked you.
Yep.
Of obtaining what your research has shown.
Yeah.
And we can do that when it's published, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it should be available. It will be web published, and so there will be a downloadable link there.
Okay.
I just got to go through some final hurdles there and just kind of polish everything up and get what the university wants, and we'll be all ready to go.
Okay.
So I just want to thank you for your time, though.
Thank you for the time you put into it. I mean, that's, it's nice to have, whether one agrees or disagrees with what the results are, it's nice to have the process proven that has gone through to arrive at what these results are. I can might quibble with you about this or that, but it's quibbling about is it really 76% of the citizens support the process, or is it really only about 72? I mean, that's a quibble, but if not, to me, writing these things down, the bottom line is that still the sucker is split right down the middle, basically. I mean, That's the difficulty. So, yeah, 47% prefer the outcome, 76% the process. Like you say, there's duplication in different folks. But it's not like 85% think that the whole idea is bad and 20% think it's a good. I mean, it's not that simplistic. And your data seems to reflect that.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing is I found that most people seem to have some kind of want to have more public safety. They just don't necessarily agree with the measures that have been taken.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, only 10% felt like it was sufficient in some way or another. They felt like they were okay with this current level of public safety. It's just you then have quibbles over the instruments used, what's the role of the federal government in all this, what's the role of the state, how exactly should we respond to this. And so I found that just one of the biggest things was a lot of individuals just seem to have a lack of trust in either the county government or the state government or the federal government. They don't necessarily provide exact reasons for that, but they feel like they've somehow been mistreated in one way or another, and that's why they won't vote for measures taken by the county.
Did you say 10% were okay with the current level of public safety? Is that what you said?
In general, I guess 10% of opponents, people who opposed the levy, said that they felt like poor outcomes would happen if the levy was passed. Or they said something along the lines of that they felt like the current situation was okay and they were in a good place. That doesn't necessarily mean that exactly 10% of them all had that feeling, but that's pretty much what that is, that they feel like the best option for them is to remain the current level of taxes and public safety provision.
Okay.
So, closing your laptop.
Yeah.
Personally, were you surprised at anything, or... What direction did you come out of this with yourself?
I mean, I think that 10% figure was probably the most surprising, as that there are individuals out there that are just completely unwilling to have any kind of tax measures or any kind of other measures taken to increase the level of public safety. Granted, I don't want to interject my opinion at all because I don't really know the situation that well. But I was a little bit surprised that there were people who just did not seem like they would want to ever come to the table at all about that. Mm. Granted, it's a very small minority of the population, and so I don't think that you can really extrapolate that to many people at all. I feel like the vast majority still feel like they need something.
Yeah, it's just a process of getting there.
It's just a process of getting there. Yeah.
Super.
Yeah. I just want to make a comment here in regards to the contradictions. The opponent's talking about the contradictions in crime rates. Is that there are people who will go online and get crime statistics from the state police.
Mm-hmm.
And when that it doesn't represent the true crime rate, because there's so many crimes that occur that, number one, aren't reported, or reported, never investigated, or reported, investigated, never prosecuted, can't catch someone. Those don't make it to the state police database.
It's more like the horrendous accidents on the fish hatchery. No law enforcement showed up, so there's no reports were made.
That's where, people say, well, state police, they don't have that bad a crime problem. Well, then why are the state police here? but the point is that we all know, and I'm in my own neighborhood, I mean, we have a neighborhood watch kind of thing, and there's burglaries and break-ins and thefts and, all kinds of things that go on all the time. They never report it, We know that there's... Pardon?
You go ask that state policeman that was at the LIPS meeting, he'll tell you what he sees.
Right.
If you talk to the individual.
Yeah.
Right. So they don't get on those police, they don't get on the state police statistics unless they are actually reported and processed.
Mm-hmm.
And actually sometimes convictions, because sometimes if there's an arrest made, there are no charges made. So, you may arrest somebody, put them in, and the DA says, well, we don't have enough to convict them, so they let them go. And that doesn't make it also to the state police crime statistics. So, it's interesting that there are people who still don't want to believe that happens, but it does, and it happens all the time.
Look at the number of cases you'd have, though, if every little incident was reported. You'd be overwhelmed.
Well, I think that one of the biggest issues that we have is people keep talking about patrol, but there's no way we could ever patrol nearly 600 miles of county roads. Couldn't have enough officers ever to do that. But if we had a jail to keep the ones in that are arrested, who are arrested on, warrants and who are charged with crimes, but we don't have room, we let them go and they go commit another crime.
If there was some teeth in prosecution, then you'd have something else.
Right. So if you can keep them until they're prosecuted, or you have someone who has a warrant that you can keep them without letting them go, or if they violate their probation and they pick them up, instead of saying naughty, naughty and having to let them go, we can actually say, okay, you're back in there for another week. It keeps them off the street. So the jail, I think, is kind of the key to keep, because many of the crimes are repeat offenders. People keep doing the burglaries, people keep doing it. So you let them in, you let them out, they do more burglaries.
They need the paper.
Yeah, that's what it is. So I think that's the weakest link that we have is the jail. And I know Dave Daniel has worked really hard to increase his level of service there in regards to contracting for deputies with the state and things like that. He's tried very hard to get that done. So
yeah, I'll look forward to the written report before we get that, because to me the great benefit of this is it takes anecdotal incidents and stories and puts it down at some real percentage of what are the real concerns. Whether good, bad, or indifferent, I mean, these are concerns that have to be looked at and addressed in some way. But to be able to have that in some encapsulated form and organized form, that kind of stuff, I appreciate all the work you've done on that, because it's for our benefit, not for your master, but it's for our benefit.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the time I've been able to spend with these guys, be able to learn from these guys, and be able to kind of use this process to, yeah, of course, benefit myself, but also kind of help you guys along,
sure,
too.
Thank you very much.
Nice to meet you.
Take care.
Thanks.
Good
to see you again, Karen.
Great to see you again.
I like you, Keith. Don't mess it up.
Thank you very much.
Nathan,
bring you to work. Yeah, thanks.
Bye.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye, Mike. See you.
Okay. This should be
okay. Strategic plan for economic development. Did you? Simon's not here, but did you get a chance to look through this? This is the draft of the strategic plan with the city and the county.
Yeah, hold on.
And
had the conversation about that.
Anyway, if you have, I understand if you haven't had time to read
it. And what are the front of it? What's
I had it emailed to everybody.
Okay, no, I didn't. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Like 3 weeks or something.
Yeah, because you have time to look at it. And I also had Julie Strong to look at it. And if we just have any comments or anything, we need to get them back to Econ Northwest. And so, if you do, forward them to the feet. Okay. All right. Yes. Oops. I lost one.
Important page
off of my report here. Okay. Now, Simon brought forward this letter. Does he want us to, even though he's not here, does he want us to go forward with this?
Sure. To be here at noon today.
Okay, it's about a footbridge over the West Fork of the Illinois River in the park.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is to go to, it's a letter of support that they need to help obtain the funding for the feasibility study. So I don't have any objection to you.
It simply is a letter to the grant.
Right, saying that we are supporting.
Saying we support it. This is not just some volunteer idea that one guy has gotten. No, I don't have any problem supporting.
Okay. Well, So we just say we will support. I don't have a motion to support this, just in case we need a motion. I don't think we do, but I move to support this.
Yeah, I move that we support this, letter to regarding the construction of a footbridge over West Fork,
right.
West Fork of the Illinois River.
Yeah, it's a federal land access program.
Yeah. And I would move we sign that letter. Support, okay. A letter of support and sign it.
Okay, and I second the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, and have the letter ready in the signature file.
Yeah, he
okay.
said, Commissioner Harris said that he is in favor of moving this forward.
Right, he is. I saw his email
yeah.
in here
yeah.
in this packet. So, yep, we'll sign it. All right. Anything else today, Commissioner?
Two things. One, Mr. Lipsick, we had they had a meeting last week, and I was not able to make it due to my hospitalization and visitation. But they did not arrive. They did not have a quorum, so they could not have provided, you know, a Lipsick recommendation.
Right.
Diane, who was the chair, and she sent just an email saying that the group wants to be able to address the money every year as the money amount will vary. Judge Baker also acknowledged that this money could be spent on prevention and treatment projects in the future. So suffice to say that without any consensus, though they do, obviously they have a 101 different ways that they want to use the money, and they've only got two ways that they can do it, kind of a thing. So it's, there was a consensus it's important, and that if there was any decision that had to be made today, kind of a thing, that money would be held in the for a next fiscal year or project or whatever it might be. But they did not come up with an official suggestion or recommendation.
I talked to the sheriff actually over the weekend. Talked to the sheriff and asked him about it because he wasn't able to be here. He was out of town. And he said that he was inclined because it isn't very much money. It would not, there's not enough to even pay for a half a deputy. There's
right.
not enough to
right.
pay for anything. But it could make a huge difference when it comes to prevention and education.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that might be where we need to have it, which would mean it would have to be in the public health or in the drug, drug court or prevention or something. So that was his suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, like I said, he couldn't attend the meeting. I think, who was it that said, that, well, maybe the BCC should just make the decision and just tell us where it's going to go. I saw that somewhere. I can't remember who sent me that. But anyway.
So, yeah, from Lipsick, there was not a specified recommendation.
Right. Okay. So that's legal to us, apparently. We will do that.
Yeah.
We will apply. When we get the money.
When
we still haven't seen any money yet.
It's coming. It's in the mail.
The check is in the mail. I haven't even heard that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't know, being that it just started in January, I don't know if they're going to wait to divvy that money up each biennium. Or if they're going to wait till the end of fiscal year. No one's ever said how they're going to divide or when. Right. And it may be after they have the first full year, which will be January, first full year of money that comes in. So we'll just have to wait and see. Okay.
One other thing I went through is on the, my question was, any action taken on this issue? Reading some of the older, correcting some of the minutes, and then I go, oh, did we ever talk about that? I don't know. Commissioner Aaron, after Robert Rice is leaving, Tedder's recommendation, he suggested advertising for the position immediately, and the board agreed. You have to remember that discussion taking place. And then we discussed the difficulties of filling it. Commissioner Walker said that she would talk with Julie Schmelzer to see if she has experience in building and safety, and according to her email,
that was
generally
her response
was yes. But there has to be, to me, there has to be, what are we doing in advertising? Have we advertised that?
I talked to him, JJ's out today, but I talked to him yesterday, and after we had mentioned that at that meeting, we talked about whether we would have to fill that position, combined departments. So he was gathering more information for us.
Okay.
And so that's what he did here for us to make that decision. So, yeah, we need to advertise it, but I don't think he has advertised it because he wants direction as to...
What is advertising for?
Yeah, because when he advertises it, he has to advertise with a
right.
job description.
Right.
And if we're going to change that job description, we have to do it when we advertise it. So that is what we're going to do on Thursday. I had her put it on the schedule again for Thursday.
Okay.
So that we can decide, are we going to, and of course, before I finish that, he brought up an interesting concept, is that to contract out these
right,
building officials.
Right.
And there are companies that actually do that, and he's going to work for a company
mm-hmm.
that does that, so perhaps we could contract out for the building official and get someone who has the qualifications
mm-hmm.
for building official. And not have to replace the person, but actually contract for that person. Another county does that already. And that's why I asked, you know, if they do that kind of thing, because, yeah, they do it for the cities.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it certainly is a question that should be looked at.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So contracting for building official, putting the department under the planning, community and planning,
mm-hmm.
however we structure that, where they still do the regular inspections and that kind of thing, but then we have this contract that does the more complex stuff
mm-hmm.
and acts as our building official person. So,
yeah.
I think that might be
certainly
a consideration.
Julie has certainly stepped into a real hornet's nest situation, but she certainly has demonstrated to me in a way her full capability of handling this whole thing.
Yeah, she has. She's
yeah.
very capable.
Yep.
And okay, speaking of Julie, she was at the town hall last week in Williams. Tonight is the Wolf Creek town hall. Are you going to go to that?
I am going to try to go to that.
Okay. All right, that's okay.
Yeah.
If you can, good. Wally will be there as well. He said he would be there tonight
okay.
as well.
Okay.
I think it's the one in. I think it's the one in Cave Junction he can't make it to.
Mm.
That's the one he can't get to. So. Okay.
Good.
All right. Nothing else? We are adjourned at
9:49. See you at, when's our next one? Is?
No, we don't have one for today.
Well, it's tomorrow.
6:30 is the town hall.
Yeah, tomorrow. 3:00. Okay. Got you, ma'am.
We are adjourned.